Welcome to Get Over, the Consciousness Transforming Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. We have a fabulous show today. We're going to be speaking with Catherine Hudson, and we're going to be talking about her new book, Inviting Angels into Your Life, Assistance and Support from the Angelic Realm. Folks, take a deep breath. You know, we need help right now. We need all the angels that can come around us and assist us in any way possible. And Catherine is here to help us call on the right ones, to help us move our lives forward, not only our life, but our soul paths forward. So, you know, listen in, take some good notes, and I do encourage you to go get this book. It's a keeper on my shelf, and you guys know I don't say that all the time, but she covers about 15 different angels and how they can help you, even down to what crystals, colors, the whole nine yards. You're going to absolutely enjoy it. So, with further ado, let's get going. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you shift your consciousness to break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you let go of the BS that is holding you back, but you guys know I always ask that question, are you truly ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. A bit about me for my new listeners, intuitive since birth. I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience supporting people to break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing cutting-edge information that enables you to prosper and thrive. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I am the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I also authored 2 books. I provide consultations and healings in all areas of life that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your very best life. Now, my clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence, but they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist, so whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, NessMoniqueChapman.com, and I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. My guest today, Catherine Hudson, Brock's born and bred, teaches and works around the world with folks looking to open up their gifts and connect to divine assistance, especially in the form of angels. She lives in Paris, France, but she also spends time in New York City and the Emerald Isle of North Carolina, all beautiful places. Her book, Inviting Angels into Your Life, is the first of her books to be released in English, and she's a former banker and works to inspire others to find their way in alignment with the highest expression of life possible. And that comes with the help from friends in high places. And you could check her out at her website, and that's CatherineHudson.fr/welcome/. Oh, again, Catherine Hudson. So that's KatherineHudson.fr/welcome/. Welcome, Catherine.
Oh, thanks so much, Monique. I'm so happy to be here.
Hi, I am so glad you're here. You know, there's so many books on angels that are, you know, flooding the market, and sometimes you go like, well, why one more? But your book on angels is very distinctive. You concentrate on 15 angels, and there's much more, but you concentrate on what I call the core 15, and you truly share, I'm going to say cutting-edge information on how to connect with them. So, let's start with a little bit of your background. You know, your bio said you're Bronx born and bred, but you're living in Paris, France right now. You worked on Wall Street. So how did you get from that, I'm going to say, high corporate level to just living life and embracing the angels?
It has been a journey. My sister's 10 years older than me, and when I was 6, I gave it back. So I guess I borrowed her French book and started studying French. So I always wanted to be here, and I know now that it was because it was a soul call. From the kid dreaming in the Bronx, 6-floor walk-up, of living one day in Paris and also being connected to spirituality and the existence of higher beings at that time. And then growing up in the Bronx, you kind of come away from that and ending up on Wall Street. Yeah, it's been quite a trip. But I think that nothing has ever, the idea and the feeling and the call towards spiritual connection and also towards the connection in France has never left me. But the Bronx has never left me either. So when I do go back to New York, that's where I go. So it's a funny old life that the two places, I think they have a lot in common. And thank you for saying that they're all beautiful places. I think they are. But really the turning point was a funny story that's in the book. I don't know if you remember it, but I was actually working in Midtown Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I was in a branch, and it was across the street from Grand Central Station. And I wasn't feeling that great. I'd been out the night before. I'm English. And so I was trying to dodge clients that day, actually. And a woman came into the bank, and she did not go to the tellers. At that time, there were many, many tellers. And she did not go to the tellers. She came directly back to where I was seated with a couple of bankers that were very happy to be of service. So I thought I could dodge her as I had other clients that morning. But no, she came directly toward me. And even though I kind of gave her my back and pretended to look furiously for some missing papers or actual files and drawers at that time, she persisted and she waited and she sat down at my desk until I turned around and served her. And the moment that I extended my hand with the typical banker greeting, "Hello, I'm Catherine Hudson, how may I help you?" She did not take my hand, and she said, "No, I'm here to help you." And she placed in my hand an amethyst crystal saying, "This will help you with your addictions."
Oh, wow.
And Monique, it was a moment. And I'm telling you, and again, I'm all shivers. You know, it's just, I have the crystal right in front of me as you're speaking. It was a moment. And I, for the first time in my life, I didn't have a quick comeback. I looked at the rock in my hand, and it's not a small amethyst either. I looked at it, and my brain was reeling, trying to make some sense of what was happening. And then finally, I was such a cynic. I thought I had it. I know. I lifted my head to tell the woman, you know, you can't sell this stuff in this bank. She was already at the door. She was already leaving. So this woman came into the bank to deliver a message and a crystal, and then she got right out of there. So
Let me ask you a question about that, though. Do you, in your heart of hearts, do you believe that she was truly a human being, or do you believe that she was an angel that took the form of a human to help you?
It's that is the ultimate question. To my mind, she was either my guardian angel who was tired of saving my ass, because I would get myself in trouble. And, you know, angels can't intervene if we don't ask, unless the person is putting themselves in risk of mortal, you know, some mortal situation where they might die and it's not their time yet. So I would get up to trouble. So I think that my angels were a little bit tired of chasing me around. But it was either that, so somebody who had taken my angel that took form, or, and this is kind of how I feel, somebody like you and like me, somebody, a person, who had such an open channel that they received this guidance, this message, to do some good, and listened to it, came in, did the deed, did the, you know, delivery of the message and the stone, and then left. And to tell you the truth, that just inspires me even more, because I want to be that person. That once I got past the shock and the trauma of it, and once I grew up a little bit, and once the transformation really, really, I allowed it, it gives me the desire to do that sort of thing for other people, to be an agent of change for others. So to my mind, my angels were involved. Either they said, okay, I got to go down there and do this myself, or they found somebody I had never met before, never saw again, and sent them into a situation that was unwieldy at best because I was not welcoming. And this person just was pure grace for me.
Well, I asked you that question because I had a very interesting situation happen to me when, this is eons ago, when I was selling real estate, and I could never do math. I still can't do math. I can do everything, but I can't do math. And there was this gentleman that came into the brokerage. He was dressed in all white. I mean, top hat, white suit, white man, white shoes, white belt buckle, and he was selling a particular product that would help you figure out, you know, all those numbers. All you had to do was punch them in, and voila, it would spit out, you know, you punch in the formula, it would spit out what you needed to tell the client. So I'm like, great, this works for me. So I showed interest in it, and he asked me if I would meet with him for lunch, and I'm like, well, okay, yeah, you know, why not? We get to talk more about this product. And he actually came to pick me up from my office. He was driving a white Eldorado Cadillac that had white exterior, white interior, white walls on the wheels, okay? And we had lunch, you know, very interesting conversation. I ended up buying his product, and, you know, he dropped me back off at my office, never to be seen again. The name of the company that he said he represented, no one else could find it. No one else could find this particular device because I was talking to it, you know, other office members. Nobody could find it. I think that he was an angel. I mean, he just like
he's absolutely an angel. Yeah,
you know, and I was like, wow, you know,
that
really
is so
well.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of blew me away. So, tell us, what in your mind do you feel an angel is, and what is an archangel? Is there a difference?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes and no, and I'll explain. So an angel, when I say the word angel, what I mean is, I'm talking about the guardian presence that accompanies each of us. An angel is not, however, an intermediary that kind of makes, you know, links us up with God or source. Rather, we don't need an intermediary. We're children of God. So what angels do is they facilitate that connection. An angel is, in fact, the breath of God, an expression of God. So really, if we can imagine, my favorite image for it is God reaching a hand down into the density of the earth plane and making it easier for us to connect with divine grace. So when I say angel, it's our guardian presence. This is the presence of God that was there when the idea of us began and will be with us throughout this whole ride, this crazy ride called life. And each of us has that guardian presence. So those are angels. And then an archangel is also an expression of God, a part of God, but specific to qualities, divine qualities. So I always joke that my mom, being Irish and having seven kids running around in our Bronx apartment, would sometimes say, "Oh God, give me strength," in a very dramatic way. And so that would be Archangel Michael. So the strength of God is Michael, and so the healing or the divine communication, beauty of God, these are all qualities that we actually have in us as children of God. And I know there's a lot of God in this conversation, but we have all of this depth and richness within us that we're not even always aware of. And so by calling on an archangel for a particular quality to help us stand in our power or communicate in a difficult situation or appreciate beauty ours or the beauty of someone else, et cetera, it evokes these qualities from within us at the same time. And so it is both reaching outward for help, but also reaching inward for that same help, because there's no place that source is not.
Okay. Well, in the book, and I chuckled when I read this, she said that angels are our get-out-of-jail-free card. Talk to us about that.
Well, I would argue that we put ourselves in jail. We bind ourselves, and and not always intentionally, of course, we wouldn't do it intentionally, but just our passing through childhood and then school and then work, et cetera, the rhythm of life that takes us through situations where our capacity to shine is called into question. And so I would almost say that we're imprisoned, or our light is imprisoned, our joy, our capacity to live our best life, our capacity to look into those dark corners and transform them. Sometimes we're limited by our experiences in the earth plane. And so that's what I would say, that that definitely is a form of imprisonment. And truthfully, where I grew up anyway, certainly in the Bronx, I learned, you know, if you want something done, you have to do it yourself, and there's nobody who's going to help you. So it was a great, great day when I finally realized that they really do exist, and there really is help, and that you don't have to do everything on your own. So that's why I call it a get-out-of-jail-free card, a relationship with angels, is a capacity to be released from the imprisonment that our light, our joy, and our love is often locked into.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How can we, as, you know, just mortal beings, communicate with the angels, bring them into our lives so that you said earlier, they won't help us unless, you know, we ask, unless we're in mortal danger. So how can we open up to talk to them? Say we believe in them, and, you know, we don't have to convince someone of that. You know, angels exist. They exist across religions, spiritual systems. So how can we communicate with them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great question. So the first part of your question, you said, since we're just mortal beings, I would argue that we're probably more than that.
Okay.
Because there's no place that source is not. So already we have a decidedly small view of ourselves. And so often I meet people who say, well, who am I to call on angels? And, you know, they're probably busy with more important things to do than me. And the truth is that they're not. They're especially our guardian presence, which is an individual presence. They're kind of waiting on us to call. The reason that they don't come if we're not asking is because free will is actually a real thing, and our free will is respected. And the truth of who we are on a soul level has chosen to come into this life and wander through the experiences and grow through the experiences that we're having. Mm-hmm. But once we decide, oh, okay, well, if it's possible, then I would like some help, please, and thank you. Seriously, all we have to do is ask. And that does not have to be in the form of singing with a choir or special words. It's truly the desire of the heart, because our angels, of course, can read the desires of our heart. And whatever words are from the heart and authentic, to express that. So something as simple as closing our eyes and saying, okay, listen, I need help. Please help me, angels. Mm-hmm. And how many times and how many days in life does one feel that way, especially in this past year? So the great news, I think, is that it's actually very simple, the asking. And once we ask, the answer is yes, they're here to help. What I notice most often with clients and with students is that the problem is they don't know how to wait for the answer or recognize the answer when it comes.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody taught us how to do this stuff, you know. In fact, maybe the opposite was taught. I always laugh, you know, we think it's so adorable when an 8-year-old says, oh, yes, I have a guardian angel who loves me and watches over me. But if you say it and you're 28 or 38 or 48, you know, eyes roll and people think, oh, okay, this one's had a little too much to drink. Mm-hmm. But effectively, there's no expiration date for angels. And interestingly, I think it's very interesting that about the time when it's no longer socially acceptable really to talk about having guardian angels is about the teenage years. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly when we start to really need them, most of us. And some of us need them before that, but most of us really start needing them as we step into more grown or adult roles and life becomes more complicated. So I would argue that this poo-pooing of angels is kind of almost intended and I'm not going to get into conspiracy theories, but when we start to need them, we are given to understand that they're not really there, that was just a nice story for children. So wasn't I delighted when I found out that truly you just have to ask. And once we do ask, to pay attention to the signs, what we might see, what we might feel, what we might hear, or what we might suddenly just understand. And so these forms of clairvoyance I talk about in the book.
Yeah, I was gonna go there because you said that, you know, teenagers, they can't believe or stop believing in angels, but we lose all of our, well, most people lose their clairs by the age of 5 because it's not socially acceptable. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, the clairs and how we could work and communicate with angels, and what are your thoughts on why society has to dumb us down on this?
Well, yeah, isn't it something? Are you noticing, I'm sure you're noticing with your clients as I am, that now as more parents are aware, more children will be keeping their clairs open because the parents are knowing how to support them better, because, you know, back in the day we weren't supportive of this kind of thing unless it was something in the family. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what I do is help people open up to their clairvoyant gifts, because our 5 senses are not all we've got. And while there's a difference between how I play guitar and how Mozart played music, there's like Jonathan Edwards, but each and all of us have the possibility to open up to gifts that are more than the 5 basic senses that we were brought up with. And I would almost, I would say that there's a link between the 5 senses. The 5 senses help us interpret the physical world around us, and the clairs really bring us more into connection and help us to connect with what is perhaps not as visible. And so with clairvoyance, I see more and more people noticing signs, and signs like repeating numbers or feathers or, really a sign can be just about anything. The people who have the rare gifts, the Mozart-level gifts of seeing auras, angels, dead people, really are just people that are more comfortable with their gifts. It's either stayed open since they were children, or they've gotten to the point where they're comfortable with it. In my experience, we can reopen gifts by starting with our physical clairs and then move to a comfort level that allows us to see beyond the veil. So I'm really excited about the exercises in the book that are teaching people, and people are starting to contact me. And I think if we could, by word of mouth, everybody open up to our gifts and then let others know that they've got them too, and that this is not a domain of elitism, but rather every individual is an instrument that will play differently. And recognize the value of how our instrument plays rather than wanting to play like somebody else does. So, the capacity of feeling is very, very often underrated and undernoted. You know, everybody feels. Everybody's got clairsentience. The whole idea of walking into a room or walking into a restaurant, and sometimes it's just like, oh, no, I can't eat here, and leaving. I think everybody's had that experience. Well, why does that happen? And maybe it's the decor, but if it's not the decor, it might be that the energy of the place is just not resonating well with our own energetic field. Or we might walk into some place, oh, it's so wonderful in here. You know, we might be immediately elevated because the energy is just so delicious. Well, why is one delicious for one person and maybe for somebody else? No, really? You think so? I don't feel that way at all. So beginning just to notice what we're already expressing and starting as a starting point with, okay, I recognize that I do have clairsentience, and it expresses with good chills and bad chills, for example. You know, and I think everybody gets the good chills and the bad chills. Now, they're just chills. Why do we know that some are, oh, wonderful, and others are like, I shouldn't walk down that street? As we start to realize that we're already experiencing some of these gifts and lend more credence to them than say school taught us to do, I think that people will realize that a lot of this stuff is way more normal than we thought. The reason that I think that society puts the shibosh on this kind of thing is really fear. And it's always fear that blocks love. Mm-hmm. And so fear of the unknown, something scary happening. I know that for myself, and I'll admit it, at the beginning with angels, I said, listen, I don't want to hear you right away. I don't want to hear you. That's going to freak me out. And it was a few years after I was communicating that I said, okay, now I'm okay. Now I'm all right.
You were ready.
And they waited for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting.
So the fears that, pardon me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to talk about, I want to delve a little bit deeper into fear. On page 38 in your book, you talk about fear trumps love. So talk to us in that vein about fear and love and how we can get past the fear or at least work with our fears.
Yeah, absolutely. So, the language of it is funny, isn't it? So when we arrive, I couldn't help myself. I'm sorry.
And no, fine, because that's what I was thinking when I was reading the book and I wrote the question down, and that orange thing came to my mind, and it's like, oh my goodness. So talk to us.
So when we come into the game, when we're born, we're coming directly from source, and we're coming into the earth plane where there is a lot of heaviness and a lot of there's a lot of beauty, but there's also a lot of ugliness. So we've got this duality going. And we arrive, and when children arrive, aren't they beautiful? When children arrive, they're already shining. When children arrive, they open up their arms, and they're ready. Ah, I'm here. I'm ready to love y'all. Mm-hmm. And then, hello? Is there anybody out there? You know, there's this non-response at the same level, because human beings, once we get here and we're here a while, and certainly as we grow into adults, we've learned not to express the fullness of that spontaneous enthusiasm of light and love and joy. Sometimes, unfortunately, we learn that very, very quickly. And so when children come into the world, there's love, and then the response is not always at the level of what we're offering. And so you kind of take a step back in the world, close, you know, cover up, build fortresses sometimes. I had moats and a big castle. But, you know, to protect ourselves from the hardness of life sometimes. So if you can imagine it like putting our hand in a flame, I'm not going to do that again. And so it's the fear of being hurt again that diminishes and imprisons our shining and our love, and so our courage to take steps that are out of the norm and live a life that is the life that's calling to us but is different from the lives of others. And so fear is the only thing that can diminish our love, but once we step into our love and already stand in that space, and angels can help us to do it, we can calm down. And we can calm down, and then once we're at peace and we're no longer fearful, we express love. If we think of it like, if you think of one person who you absolutely adore, you love, we don't have to filter ourselves with these people. We say what we think. We can give them a big old hug if it's not COVID era, et cetera, et cetera. But we're very comfortable and fluid, and there's no barriers that we're putting up. It's rare to have those people to that degree in our lives, but that's love flowing fully and freely. Why not working with the angels make that be how we are all the time? That's my goal. I'm hoping I'll get there.
Yeah, well, you know, it's all a work in progress for all of us if we're existing on Earth.
Isn't it?
Yep, it is. Folks, we're speaking with Catherine Hudson, and her book is Inviting Angels into Your Life, Assistance and Support from the Angelic Realm. And you can check her out at her website, and that's katherinehudson.fr/welcome. KatherineHudson.fr/welcome/. In your book, you also talk about, you share this wonderful story, and it kind of made me chuckle because I remember having the same argument with my parents. And you're talking about your mom and how, I guess it was holiday time, and you had an auntie who was giving you pajamas, and you didn't want pajamas, you didn't like the pajamas, but mama said that you should placate auntie and tell her that you love them. So share that story with us and what you were going through, and, you know, what was the end result of all of that with your feelings? Hmm. I know you ended up telling your aunt you liked the pajamas, but...
Oh, I did. I heard what my mom was saying loud and clear. So the story was, it was a Christmas gift, and it was a gift of pajamas. And I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, that wasn't what I wanted for Christmas. I wanted something, you know, a doll or a toy or you know, something more fun than pajamas. So I remember my mom saying, well, tell your aunt, thank you. You bet you like the pajamas, but I don't like the pajamas. You tell her now. And I actually said, I said, well, they teach us at school and at church that we're not supposed to lie. It's not a lie. It's being nice. Now tell your aunt right now that you like, yes, I got the tone and I got the hint. And so I said to my aunt, thank you very much. I love the pajamas. And it was a lie that stuck with me. Because every single time we're not authentic, we're not telling the truth, our light dims a little bit. Now, this isn't common knowledge, and I know that my mother had only good intentions. This is how we socialize children. Maybe, and definitely it would not have been right for me to be mean to my aunt or not grateful, but my mom could have maybe guided me to something more like, that's very thoughtful. It's very thank you for having thought of me. That was very thoughtful of you. I appreciate it. Something more diplomatic. someplace between I hate the pajamas and an outright lie. But every time, every time something that's inauthentic comes out our mouth, our light dims a little bit. So in that section of the book, I'm talking about how important it is to move into a space where we feel comfortable to be loving and kind, but also honest.
Integrity.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. And, you know, my mom went to church every day. This was a woman of faith, but that's how things were done back then.
And the one thing that turned me off with religion way back when, and trust me, I was born Jewish, been Catholic, Baptist, AME, this, that, and the other, because of my parents, is that it's okay to tell the white lie, but don't tell the black lie. So what's the difference? A lie is a lie is a lie, in my opinion.
That's absolutely right. And those nuances never came from the origins of any faith. Those nuances are human layovers to make us more comfortable with social situations. And there's no difference between a lie and a lie. And there's no such thing as a white lie. Everything that we say that is not true diminishes our shining. Yes. So I'm with you on that. But eventually I was able to be strong enough to stand up and get myself out. First of all, notice how often I would, you know, it's just so much easier to lie. You know, a friend says, how do you like my dress? And you don't like it. Well, it's so much easier just to lie. You don't want to hurt their feelings, et cetera. It's more interesting to be truthful and be, I know that I can ask you because you're going to tell me the truth, be that person. And Well, you know, and white lies isn't the only thing wrong with structured religion, but it is a space that can be a space of grace, depending on the person and depending on the context.
Okay. Well, let's delve in. Yeah, it is. But let's delve in and talk about some of the angels, because I know my audience is aching for it. They want it. Okay, Archangel Azrael, because we're going through COVID right now. People are dying in the United States as of the time of this recording. Almost 47,000 people have passed from this disease. In my opinion, unnecessary, but that's a whole other conversation. So Archangel Azrael, he's the angel, I call it he, I don't know if it's male or female, I just refer to them as he, is the angel of death. So talk to us how Azrael could help those that are still here on earth work with the energy of someone making their crossing, making their transformation, and then perhaps you might have some insight on what's going on with the person that has made their transition, who's passed over, and how Azrael helps them.
So thank you for the question. He gets a bad rep, Azrael, because you know this image of the scythe and the hood and all of that. Azrael, I think we've all heard the stories of people who have had near death experiences that have died and come back, and they all talk about the light. They see the light. That light is Azrael. So Azrael comes to accompany us home, comes to take us home. When we actually cross over, when we actually have our last breath, and on our last breath, our spirit is carried forth. So that's his role once we actually pass, and a very powerful presence of love. And many people say that they kind of didn't want to come back because it's just so reassuring and helpful. But for us, for those of us that are here, so often a death is more difficult for the people who are left behind because we haven't gone on to the freedom and release of what is to come afterward. So it's very interesting, I think, to call on Azrael to accompany so that we can accompany better the people who are passing, but also that he accompanies us so that we're able to get more and more comfortable with the fact that life doesn't end when we die, and so we get more and more comfortable with the fact that someone is dying. If we're seeing somebody, let's say it's the end of the school year, and we see our best friends, and we know we won't see them over the summer now, you know, this time frame, but everybody's had this experience. Oh, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. But we know we're going to see each other again in September. So it's easier. If we thought we would never see that person again, that their lives were going to completely end, that would be a much more difficult parting. And, in fact, the beauty of working with Azrael while we're still here on the Earth plane is that we can get way more comfortable with the fact that there is a continuity, that there's not an ending, and we can treat the honor of accompanying somebody in their last days and their last moments as that, because it is truly an honor. And instead of rendering their departure more difficult, we can make it peaceful and joyful as far as possible. And so Azrael, and I say he also, and none of the archangels have genders, of course, but there are energies that are more masculine and there are energies that are more feminine. And so I'm with you on Azrael. I use the he also. But we can ask Azrael to give us a sense of what is at the same time occurring all around us, but is on the other side of the veil, so perhaps not so visible, or we're not seeing or feeling or hearing or knowing. Azrael can, in that way, also help us open up our clairs, to recognize when we get signs from somebody who's died, for example. So often a loved one will try to catch our attention, and I love these moments because the heart notices it. That must be Dad. And then the head goes, no, it's just a coincidence.
Don't believe
and the
yourself.
Fact that everybody laughs when I tell that story shows us something.
Yes, it definitely does. It definitely does. Now, there are two angels that you talk about in the book that I'm very well versed with, but a lot of people, when you mention their names, they're like, huh? And that's Saldafon and Metatron, and I actually call them twins. I don't know if they were twins, but they're brothers. So talk to us about Metatron and Saldafon, who they are, and how they can assist us.
So as I was mentioning, each of the archangels carries a certain vibration or frequency as an expression of a certain aspect of source. And Metatron is becoming more known as I'm talking to people in spiritual circles. And that's good, because that means we're growing in wisdom, because Metatron is really carries the energy of the wisdom of God, and enables us to access the deep wisdom that we're already carrying around within us, but which is covered in some cases by layers of layers of limiting beliefs that we've kind of been drinking in through osmosis since we're born. Mm-hmm. So Metatron is a great ally for helping us to understand things. Now, on a very tangible level, if somebody's going to have tests, so he's great for kids, if there are examinations or tests, or if we have to understand things for school or work, he can be very helpful. He can also be very helpful in understanding more esoteric questions or things that don't seem to have any sense at all. For example, I had a fear that was just not rooted in any physical experience I'd ever had. I like freak out when I walk on rocks. Well, I didn't really walk on rocks when I was back in the Bronx, and so I didn't know where this came from. And working with Metatron, I got an insight into the root of it, and therefore what to do to release it. So what's so interesting about Metatron is he can give us information to help us understand ourselves. So love, love, love Metatron. And then Sandalphone, gosh, Sandalphone is the music of God. Sandalphone carries the energy of all music. He helps us to release our voice, to release and free the instrument that is our body, and to align with the highest expression that can be carried. Mm-hmm. I'm smiling talking about him, because the energy is so sweet and so gentle. And while I'm saying he, and there are more feminine-energied archangels, really the most gentle is Sandalphon. The two of them are brothers in that they have an interesting story. That is, they both passed some time in incarnation on Earth. Mm-hmm. And so have a great depth of compassion and understanding for human experience. And so these are, you know, I'm saying these are two of my favorites, but I don't know that I could say the others are not.
Well, it's like a whole army up there working, you know, with us and for us and around us. And I think it's wonderful. Now, one thing I love in your book, you talk about, you have a chapter on mastering your energy, and you have a very easy, simple way of clearing chakras. Something that, frankly, I had never thought about before, but, you know, I tried it, I worked with it, and it's like, wow, folks, this actually works. So could you share with us, you know, the scale, the do, re, mi, and how that works with adjusting our chakras?
So I knew it was that one. So yeah, because it's so, once we hear it, it's like, oh, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So if we think of our body as an instrument, that we're playing while we're here on Earth, and then the we is much more than the body, of course. To clear the chakras and to harmonize the chakras and to, in that way, ensure that energy is flowing well through us, there are many ways to do it, lots and lots of ways to do it, but one of my favorite ways is by singing the scale. The most important mechanism, or the reason that any clearing exercise is effective, is clear intention. Because we're children of a creator, our intention creates. But the ritual that we use to effect that clearing of chakras, for example, is our choice and part of our creation. And so what I love, especially if I don't have a lot of time, is using these notes, vibrating, making with the sound, making my body vibrate, and don't, so it's breathing deeply into the diaphragm, and beginning with the first or root chakra, the lowest one, and then rising upward as the voice rises, mm-hmm. each one gets cleared. So I will save you the singing at this time, but it is so elegant and just a. It's simple. It's easy. If you don't have a lot of time, it's even fun also, and it's another way of getting our voices back open, if ever the world has brought us to closing them. So many people have had experiences with that silent stuff, and I know I did. And when we were kids, it was kids are to be seen and not heard. So if you grow up with that, it's time to take those voices back. And one way to do double duty is to take our voices back and sing the do re mi fa sol la ti do going upward, and it really can clear and open wide our channel.
It definitely does. And the other process that you have that I wanted to mention is the power of silence. Talk to us about that.
The power of, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Silence, being quiet.
Ah, yes. So important, isn't it? Mm-hmm. As much as I love to talk. But if we think about a friend, everybody's got a friend who talks without ceasing. Mm-hmm. And think about the experience of being in that person's presence. Do we think that this is a particularly powerful person? But everybody I ever ask that question to says no, definitely not.
Yeah, right.
And is it tiring to be in their presence? Yes,
yes.
Absolutely. And so we know that there's this phenomenon. Well, what's the energetic rule behind it? Every single word that leaves our mouth carries energy with it. And so and we create with that energy. So for somebody who is prattling on about nothing, just talking to fill space, these people are unknowingly, of course, giving all their energy away, spilling it all out, so they're not keeping anything for them, and they're not creating much of anything with it. So the invitation is to recognize that every single word creates. When we are with somebody who doesn't speak very often, so if we think about there's a big dinner at a dinner table, and there's one that's going on and on and on, and people, our eyes are glazing over, and we're trying to pay attention. Mm-hmm. We're maybe thinking about, I have to call mom tomorrow, And then at the other end of the table, there might be somebody that's not speaking at all, and suddenly that person starts to talk. Everybody turns.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not accustomed to them speaking, we attribute value to whatever it is they're going to say. Whether or not it's just a natural reaction. So as we move into spaces where we are more and more comfortable with our own silence, because so many people are not comfortable with silence. In fact, silence brings us into connection with the truth of ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and for some people that's scary. I know some people turn the TV on the moment they come into a house, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Have that background noise, because silence is a little spooky. Silence is only spooky because the truth of who we are is just behind it. But the truth of who we are is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that nobody told us that this is something that we could delve into to good effect. So silence, I think, is one of the major tools that we can use when we decide to step into our power. To not give away our energy, not give away our power, to speak when we have something to say and when we're creating consciously with those words. Yeah, absolutely. Love silence.
Yes, me too. Well, we're at the end of our time together. I could talk to you for hours.
I can't believe I went so fast. I know.
But what pearl of wisdom do you have to share with the audience, to leave with the audience?
This is coming from, I'm doing a message from the angels. It's a 1-minute thing on Instagram every day for a year. And the one from today is the following, and I think it's just perfect for people who are interested in connecting with angels. Use your breath, every breath, to bolster your being. Ask your angels to help. Breathe in to vivify every cell, every level of being, and breathe out to release all toxicity. This is at any rate how breathing works, but consciously doing it, even for just a few breaths, even for just a few moments, mm-hmm. and why not with the help of the angels, will bolster our being on all levels and facilitate good health and shining. It's
wonderful.
An excellent prelude to speaking with angels, but that will be for another day.
Okay. Well, absolutely wonderful, folks. And the only that's absolutely free. You can do that. Doesn't cost you anything except some
yeah.
you know, of your time, you know, but mm-hmm. it's COVID. What else do you have to do? Help yourself, okay? Help yourself.
That's right.
Catherine, thank you so much for being with me today. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm so glad that, to be connected. And bravo for all you do, Monique. I know that you're such a great help. You're an angel to a lot of people.
Oh, well, thank you. And to the audience, I want to thank you for hanging in here with us. You know, it's been, 20 years between radio show and podcast, and you're still here. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I generally appreciate it. And folks, I want you to remember that the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of connecting with your angels. Abundant blessings, light, and love to all. Agape.